Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the radio.com app today.
I have a confession. I'm addicted to the news.
You know I'm totally off script right now.
Journalism is cool again, and you have endless content, let's be honest.
And this is how I got elected, by being off script.
Now, Mark Reardon.
I've seen people almost go to the bathroom in their pants in his presence.
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
All right, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, as we will take you through the next few hours here on KMOX with a bevy of topics and information. And we, I think we maybe have some people listening that don't ordinarily get to do it because of the holiday. It's dead downtown again. It was like the other day with the ice storm. How about that on Friday? Now, look, I have mixed feelings about this just because if we don't cause panic throughout the area, then people will not heed the warnings and you do have ice and then everybody goes off into ditches and stuff like that. But I mean, there was really nothing, right? We had a little black ice and there were a few, maybe some decks that people slipped, like the deck in your backyard, not the one that's on 44. I don't think there are any on 44 or 270. But again, I don't want to hammer our friends in the weather department too much, because I think, as Steve Templeton told us last week, and this is true, if you go back to that last ice storm, and I sat in it for 5 hours, my trip down 55, I got stuck at a gas station. That was when they didn't treat the roads very well. MoDOT got out there, they treated the roads, and by the time I went home on Friday night, it was like less traffic, fewer cars than New Year's Day, I think. It was empty, so maybe that was a good thing. But the weather didn't turn into very much on Friday. We have on the show this afternoon, Selina Zito is going to be with us, a columnist for the New York Post, the Washington Examiner, and the author of the book, The Great Revolt. She, more than I think anyone, really dialed down on what the electorate saw in Donald Trump and the revolt, as she called it, in 2016. And she's keeping an eye on this election cycle as well. Congresswoman Ann Wagner is going to be with me this afternoon. We're going to talk about the gun protests in Virginia, which everyone was freaked out about. It was white supremacists. There's going to be violence. Everything's fine. Everything is fine. But, of course, we have this little impeachment trial that starts tomorrow in the United States Senate. And we don't know how long it's going to last. Not exactly sure about witnesses. All these things are still sort of up in the air. And one of the folks that I depend on for good information, I'll just put it that way, with no spin, Lisa Desjardins from the PBS NewsHour, who's a friend, longtime contributor to this show. Lisa, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. So I guess we're about to enter into this trial tomorrow. What do we know about the way this is all going to take place here in the coming days, the coming weeks, the coming months? I don't even know if we have a specific timetable that people have agreed to.
There is more that we don't know than we do know. And obviously, we're less than 24 hours out from this trial beginning in earnest. But let me start with what I got for you.
Yeah.
First, it's going to start tomorrow with Majority Leader McConnell presenting a resolution. We call it the organizing resolution, basically setting up the rules for the beginning of this trial, the opening phase of this trial. That resolution will contain how much time each side gets, how long they go each day, and it may contain, we expect it to contain a small provision about witnesses that will be very general. It won't be specific. That resolution and the debate over it will likely take up most, if not all, of tomorrow, because Democrats can propose amendments. Each amendment, each one, gets 2 hours of debate, up to 2 hours of debate, and that's by the legal teams involved. Senators, you will not hear from them. They are not allowed to speak during the trial per Senate rules, but the legal teams will debate this resolution. So basically, tomorrow is going to be all process, is what we expect. That will set up the rest of the week. right now, from my sourcing, and Republicans have said publicly as well, that they would like to give each side 24 hours total to present their arguments. And initially, at least, they are considering proposing 12, that would be two 12-hour sessions. So in theory, then, if this goes forward, we would see Wednesday and Thursday, two 12-hour days of presentations by the House legal team arguing for why the president should be removed, followed by two more days, 12 hours each, by the president's team arguing why he shouldn't. But that's not firm yet. That's just what Republicans were talking about at the end of last week. There are a lot of objections to that because it means going from 1 o'clock Eastern time to 1 a.m. Eastern time each day. And some people object to that. Others say, no, let's move this trial along.
For those people listening right now, there's going to be a quiz at the end of this interview with Lisa, because it is an interesting civics lesson. And I think there are some, you know, big questions still about how this is going to all roll out. Let's go back to the witnesses and what's going to happen there. And you've been, I know you've been tweeting today, the House impeachment managers and the staff are working in a room off the Senate chamber. So what are they kind of working out right now? And what's the best guess on witnesses? Do we have that?
No, we don't have that. I think let's talk about witnesses, because that really is the heart of the debate right now over this trial. And I believe in this resolution that Leader McConnell will present tomorrow, it will say that the Senate will vote on whether to allow witnesses at some point, whether they should move to witnesses. After the opening statements, after this opening phase, then there will be a vote on whether to talk about witnesses or not. In order to bring up witnesses, that vote will need 51 senators, and it's not clear that it has 51 senators yet. If they pass that, saying, yes, we would like to discuss the idea of witnesses, then they can talk about specific witnesses, who and how many. At the same time, there is a potential deal-making going on between some like Ted Cruz of Texas and Susan Collins of Maine, who want different kinds of witnesses, but to have sort of a one-for-one deal where Republicans could call a witness they want, let's say Hunter Biden, and Democrats could call a witness they want, say Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney. That is very much in the air. It's possible a deal could break through on that, except it does not seem Leader McConnell wants that deal to work. However, if 51 votes, you know, can come together for any proposal, it will pass, and Senator McConnell knows that.
The rules require, how does this, I guess my focus here would be on the Democrats running for president, because what are the requirements for those people who are in the Senate to sit there through that trial? I mean, they're supposed to be there, right?
Oh, it is extraordinary. It's like nothing you've ever seen before, except I guess the last impeachment trial. Senators must be present and in their seats. They're supposed to be there for the entire debate, and they must also be silent. So they essentially will only be listening to arguments. They are like a jury. They will be in a giant jury box, just taking in information, unable to speak. There will be a point after opening arguments when they can ask questions. But what's fascinating is they must ask them in writing. They hand the questions up. And if it goes according to the last impeachment proceeding, the Chief Justice will read the questions out loud to whichever side, you know, the president's defense or the House prosecutors, the question is directed at. But senators must stay there. They cannot campaign, and they can't even have any kind of viral moments. I'm told, you know, if they need a quick break, they can leave the chamber for a minute or two, but they're really supposed to be in their seats the entire time.
I don't know, hearing that description, what's more potentially historic here, this impeachment trial or the fact that members of the Senate have to stay quiet for that long?
It's going to be a sight to see. But this does play into the substance of it. When you think about a 12-hour day, you think about anyone sitting in a seat for 12 hours listening to a discussion of anything in front of them and not being able to interact, that sort of wears down your mental process. You know, and we know that the Senate, we know some senators, for example, Chuck Grassley is well known as he gets up very early in the morning. He goes swimming, but he goes to bed every night at 9 p.m. This is a well-known fact. So these are senators who have very clear routines, and this is not remotely like the routine for, that most of these senators have.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Lisa Desjardins, correspondent for the PBS NewsHour, good friend of this program. Thank you so much, Lisa. It's going to be interesting to watch this, and you're always great as a helper here with some inside information. So I really appreciate it.
Oh, anytime. You know I love you guys. Thanks for asking.
Lisa Desjardins with us this afternoon on KMOX. So there's sort of that, rolls out what's going to go on with the trial here in the next few days or weeks or whatever that ends up being. Selena Zito is going to come up here in a couple of minutes, sort of break down not only the politics of this, but also what's happening in Iowa right now. And, you know, we even had a discussion. We keep having discussions about this on the Reardon Roundtable, and we'll continue to do that throughout the course of the year. Who's the nominee going to be? I have people that, and I can't remember who it was over the weekend, sort of predicted that we would have this brokered convention. We hear that every year. We heard it with the Republicans as well. Now, I think there's a real, and we'll find out what Selena thinks about this. There's a real distinct possibility, if you look at some of the polling right now, that Joe Biden can win Iowa and also win New Hampshire. He's sort of surge might be a little strong just because it's narrow, but he's gotten to the top of the polling in Iowa. Elizabeth Sanders, Mayor Pete, and Bernie Sanders. I think I just called him Elizabeth Sanders. Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Mayor Pete right behind. Then I got some people like Josh Krasauer from the National Journal saying Amy Klobuchar has some momentum and maybe she can win in New Hampshire. Sanders is on top, but Biden is right behind him in the polling. And I bring it up from this perspective. Look, Mayor Pete's not going to win South Carolina, which comes right after the first two. Joe Biden is ahead by double digits in the polling in South Carolina as you get to the further primaries and Super Tuesday. If he could lock down those first two, it's going to be very difficult to stop that nomination. And by the way, the betting odds, a lot of people like to look at the betting odds. The betting odds still have Joe Biden on top with Bernie Sanders in second. And interestingly enough, Mike Bloomberg in third on the betting odds.
Miss any part of the Mark Reardon Show? Download the podcast anytime.
Initiating download. Stand by.
At KMOX.com/Reardon.
Congresswoman Ann Wagner coming up after the bottom of the hour. One quick note here this afternoon, just because I think a fair number of folks in the audience might have gone to the University of Missouri Journalism School, as did I, graduate 1986, a name that you might remember if you were in the broadcast journalism program. That's Rod Gillette, who was the news director at Channel 8 for a while and KBIA. I think he was not at KOMU when I was a student in the mid-80s. I was a journalism student from 83 until 86, and Rod guided me through many of those months and days and years, and we didn't always, I could say fairly, we didn't always see eye to eye. I had a bit of a reputation back then with politics and behavior, I think, if we're just being honest. But look, he was an interesting man. He was, he defined journalism, I think, from a different era. And I had not spoken with Rod in a very long time, probably more than 20 years, because I stayed in Columbia after I graduated, and I'd run into him every once in a while. I'm not even so sure I didn't have him on the air when I was at KFRU. But, look, this is a different time for journalism. It's not a very proud moment as well. But Rod Gillette certainly made an impact in Columbia. He was 93 years old. He died yesterday at his home in Arizona. Joined this afternoon by the author of The Great Revolt, a great contributor to this program, Selena Zito, is with us. Selena, Happy New Year. How are you?
Hey there. I'm awesome. How are you today?
I am doing fantastic. I thought we would, I'll get your thoughts first on impeachment. We'll get to Iowa and some of the other things happening with politics. And obviously there's impeachment politics as well. Just had a little bit of a primer, if you will, on how this is all going to work. I still think I'm pretty confused, but it's unique in the sense that everybody sort of knows the conclusion, don't they?
You mean of the impeachment?
Of the trial, yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I have a story that's just up now at the Washington Examiner. You can find it at selenazito.com. But I decided that wouldn't it be interesting to ask the Democrats, moderate Democrats who tend to be pragmatic, like Joe Manchin of West Virginia, Kristen Sinema of Arizona, and Doug Jones of Alabama, what their thoughts were leading into impeachment. And I interviewed Manchin, and he said, look, it's my job not to be political when I go in there. And it's not my job it is my job to be objective and fair and not take my politics, no matter how I feel about the president, into this trial. This is something I take incredibly seriously. And, you know, and I have to weigh the fact that this man was elected to be president of the United States. And if this is a political sort of calculation, you know, aimed at him, we have to be responsible about those kinds of, you know, endeavors. And Kristen Sinema and Doug Jones released very similar statements. I did not interview both of them, but I think it's incredibly interesting to speculate what if this Senate vote isn't just all Republicans not impeaching the president.
Right.
What if it is bipartisan? I don't think we're talking about that enough.
Yeah, well, I think that's because I think a lot of people are sort of confused as far as how all this is going to work right now. And I you know, the question of witnesses, the fact that here's something that we discovered in the previous segment, the fact that these senators have to sit there and be quiet and they can't really say anything for weeks, that in and of itself is historic, right?
Well, yeah, for this generation, they've never seen anything like this. And it's going to be fascinating. I think it's going to be harder on the senators that we all know, have grown to know, to be the first to rush to a microphone afterwards, are forced to be kept silent. That doesn't mean that Adam Schiff won't weigh in, or that Nancy Pelosi won't weigh in. They've already cast their vote. But you won't see senators coming to the microphone, I guess, with the exception probably of Schumer and McConnell.
So you wrote a column at the end of last year that was about, and we've talked plenty of times about the Great Revolt, which the book that you wrote about what happened in 2016, but you said, and this was the headline of the column, I don't know if you wrote this headline, probably not, how the populist uprising of 2016 will reverberate in 2020. We talk here in St. Louis, Selena, for those people who don't know, she's in Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania, about how there's a good swath of our part of the country, if you will, that is not all worked up about impeachment, and they're rather fatigued by it all, and they're bored by it all. That's not saying that that's how you necessarily make calls when it comes to whether someone violated the Constitution, but how will this affect the election from a variety of perspectives? Because obviously some of those Senate Democrats that we mentioned can't even campaign in Iowa and New Hampshire right now.
Yeah, and, you know, the fatigue with impeachment isn't just about impeachment. It's about Russia. It's about the, you know, the endless look into the president. And it's just about this sort of inability for my profession and for a lot of Democrats, not all, but a lot of Democrats, to have accepted this is the Trump's winning in 2016. And it's just gotten to the point where people have just heard this for 3.5 years, and they're tired and they're exhausted, and they just, like, let the guy be president, you know, as long as he's not doing anything nefarious, and let this decision be made where it's supposed to be made, and that is on election day. Now, not everybody feels this way, but there are a lot of people, Trump supporters and not Trump supporters, who are just exhausted by it all.
I agree. Yeah, and I don't know where that sort of takes them through the next few months. Now, there's a couple of scenarios that exist, and this is what I was discussing before we sort of brought you on the air. Joe Biden's sort of surging right now, and I just love your opinion on this. The conventional wisdom would be that he's the guy that's got the best chance of beating Trump. Is he the guy who's the best chance of beating Trump, and how does that affect people in your state, in Michigan, Wisconsin, that did not vote for Hillary Clinton but switched over to Trump, in particular some of these blue-collar workers?
Joe Biden is the best one, but they're all pretty weak. I would say out of all the people that had announced a year and a half ago that were running, the two that dropped out, Tim Ryan and Sherrod Brown, were probably the only ones that I would say would definitely beat Trump. because they have a more populist streak and more moderate viewpoint of policy that is enough to bring over voters that moved towards Trump during Clinton's failed campaign in 2016. You know, Biden has problems in my state of Pennsylvania. His positions on fracking and fossil fuels is not going to help him win Western Pennsylvania and Scranton. And if you're a Democrat and you want to win Pennsylvania, you have to win Western Pennsylvania and Scranton. And if you're a Democrat and you want to win the presidency, you have to win Pennsylvania. And he's got a big problem.
You know, it's also interesting from the president's perspective. Here he is. He's on the eve of this historic impeachment. We know it's only happened three times. And if you listen to what he said last week, and this is where I think he excels at these campaign rallies, he's pretty relaxed right now. And there are things, if you heard any of the audio, we played some of it Friday from when Ed Orgeron and the LSU Tigers were in the White House. I mean, the president, people who don't like him and hate him, they don't like to admit this, but he can be pretty funny and charming. And that's what you're maybe seeing a little bit more of. Of course, there'll be a tweet that comes along that spoils all that, Selena, but at least for the time being, for the time being, he's pretty relaxed, I think, in an interesting way.
Yeah, he's pretty chill. Look, I've interviewed the president four times. Three times as president, one as candidate. And he can be incredibly charming, and he can be really, really funny. And he is also incredibly polite. You can tell this is someone who was brought up by parents that expected him to say please and thank you and to have manners. So it's a really different viewpoint that I have seen him as a reporter. He lets glimpses of that show, like you said, when LSU was at the White House, and he should do that a little more often.
Well, he should do it a little more often and then just kind of focus on the economy and not some of this other stuff, too. But that, I think we've learned in 4 years now that there's not a whole lot we can do about that. Selena Zito, the author of The Great Revolt, always great to have you on, Selena. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care. Congresswoman Ann Wagner is coming up on the other side of the news. I have some good audio from this gun rally in Virginia today, which everyone panicked about and turned out to be nonviolent and very non-confrontational. There was some shouting that went on and all that. It was a interesting moment when there was a reporter from NBC, David Begnaud, Gabe Gutierrez. I have a couple of different reporters on my mind today because David Begnaud did the story that was on CBS this morning about the gun rally. Not a bad story, actually, relatively fair, but Gabe Gutierrez, who is an NBC reporter, Begnaud's with CBS, Gabe was being shouted down, and then he tweeted something out about a chant that the crowd had busted into, and it was actually the Pledge of Allegiance. That's all it was. So we'll get to that. I got the audio from that coming up here in just a little bit on KMOX with Ann Wagner on the other side of the news, and Alex is here for that. All right, welcome back. I have, the SAG Awards took place last night. There was another rambling speech by Joaquin Phoenix as he accepted Best Actor. He's going to win the Oscar. I mean, the writing is on the wall right now, so we're going to have a little bit of that. Dan Buffa from Channel 5, he reviews movies for KSDK. He's going to join me in the next hour, kind of break down some things. Dan's also been at the winter warm-up throughout the weekend, and he's kind of dialed into all things Cardinals, so we'll have a little fun with that. Congresswoman Ann Wagner is with me this afternoon on this MLK Day. Ann, how are you?
I'm good. I'm wonderful. Still on my high about the Kansas City Chiefs, man. You've got to be too, right?
Well, you know, in the Packers losing avoided a very uncomfortable situation because I'm a huge Packers fan as well. But I've been a Chiefs fan since the mid-80s when, you know, I went to Mizzou and the Cardinals left here and I started going to Arrowhead. And yeah, I mean, it's so long overdue. I suffered and many of us suffered through Marty Schottenheimer. I love Marty. He was a great coach, but never got you to the promised land. And even in the past 10 years, there were some shots that the Chiefs had, and they blew it. So, yeah, it's very exciting. It really is.
50-year drought. I mean, this is, and I got to tell you, after watching that game yesterday, Pat Mahomes, I mean, that quarterback, if he's not NFL's most valuable player, I don't know who should be. You know,
he's really incredible, and I think they're going to be up against it with the 49ers. It's going to be a good Super Bowl. But, yeah, really, it's exciting. I think Mahomes, it's nice to, think that he's going to be there for a while, barring some unfortunate injury and just to have the caliber of player. There's a lot of changes in the NFL. I still am a huge NFL fan. I love some of the young talents. So
you got to drag Rodney Davidson and, you know, make him wear some Chiefs gear, okay, dude?
Believe me. See, this is the thing about that is he still hasn't, you know, we have a standing bet because Rodney's a Raiders fan. So we each time that the Raiders and the Chiefs play with a standing bet, the other person has to wear, you know, the team colors on social. Well, and I feel so sorry for Rodney because they stink so much. I've won four bets in a row. It's kind of, it's not even really nice of me to enforce the bet, if you know what I mean.
You're going to have a little grace, a little pity on him, I think, probably. But go Chiefs, go Chiefs. It's exciting. So
I think it is,
so,
too.
What's not exciting is what's going on in Washington, which is why it's better to be here in freezing, frigid Baldwin right now than it is in Washington, D.C.
So. All right, so, yeah, what are your – I mean, now that the House has sent these over and you have the impeachment managers that are involved today and meeting, you know, on Capitol Hill with the Senate leaders, but at this point there's no role for House members, is there?
No, there's really not. I mean, everything's been hastily and rushed through the House, which I think is going to cause them some difficulty moving forward. You know, tomorrow they actually convene, and there will be an organizational resolution, from what I understand, put forward by Mitch McConnell and the leader in the Senate. And it's going to have two phases. One is how long each side can talk and so on and so forth. And impeachment managers, the House managers, will present. Obviously, the White House Trump team will present, but they're also going to do a second vote on phase two, which has to do with organization and the discussion of additional witnesses and documents and additional evidence. And, you know, I don't, there is a sense that the trial cannot be about something that was not covered and taken up in the House. And this was so unfair, so political, so rushed. These two articles, we've talked about it before, Mark. I mean, there's no criminal offense. Seems to be just a way to kind of overthrow an election, but very, very flawed. Well, we'll see what how they move forward and proceed here. It's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, well, and I sense, again, I said this in the previous segment with Selena Zito, I don't think you make determinations on whether you impeach a president based on, you know, the popularity. You have to base these things on constitutional issues. But look, the country's fatigued right now. And the fact remains, and I think that most people, even in the center ideologically, they're aware of the facts here. There's very, very little chance that there will be a conviction. And there's an election that's going to take place in 7 months.
Correct. And the articles, as I said, not only is there no criminal offense here, but this concept of protecting the executive privilege is going to be the basis of this, especially strong argument when you've got national security matters that are involved. I mean, there is a separation of powers issue, and deliberations within the executive branch must be protected, and so must the separation of power when it comes down to something like impeachment. And the House would never wait for the courts to rule about whether some of these other actors should have to, and witnesses should have to, even come forward and give testimony. So you've got executive privilege and separation of power issues here. You have the fact that frankly there's no real evidence here. There's no high crime and misdemeanor. I've said over and over again, show me the constitutional standards are treason, bribery, high crimes, and misdemeanors. And I don't think that obstruction of Congress or abuse of power have been sustained in what the House put forward. But we'll see what McConnell decides to organize tomorrow.
Well, I think maybe Democrats would say if they had to do it again, they'd want to hear from Lev Parnas, who's this Ukrainian-American businessman who you know, did interviews last week, and obviously he's up against it because he's facing criminal prosecution and is trying to help out federal prosecutors. But was there anything in those revelations last week with Lev Parnas that concerned you?
No. I mean, the guy's facing federal charges over campaign finance violations and a lot of other shady dealings also. You know, I'm not one that listens to MSNBC or Rachel Maddow on a regular basis, but he seems to be just some Florida businessman who's kind of a freelancer on his own. And honestly, the communications that that I saw and read about, and I'm only, you know, seeing what others are reading too, if in fact they're even paying attention, it all appears to be one-sided. It's all about what his own, Parnas's own hopes and efforts and beliefs and things are. I don't know where he's basing all of this factually, but potentially. But, you know, I mean, there was a rush in the House. They did it quietly, much of it in closed secret sessions, and did not even, they, you know, they go on and on about Bolton right now, Mark, and yet the House, during their impeachment inquiry, never even called John Bolton to testify. So it's very, very peculiar to me. If you're either writing a book or you're facing federal campaign, federal charges and violations, I think you're a little suspect.
Yeah. Congresswoman Ann Wagner with us this afternoon. So what happens in the House during this whole period?
Well, we are back in our districts this week, thankfully, and working today's Martin Luther King Day, obviously. We honor Reverend King and his wonderful contributions to civil rights and to so much of the decency in our society, I think, moving forward. And we'll be working the rest of the week here in the district. We head back, and there's a lot of things that we've got to get to and get done. So I think there are multiple issues that we're championing. I'm championing lowering of prescription drug prices, and we're working on a lot of my human trafficking legislation. Obviously, we've made some strides on trade. We were able to finally get our rape kits signed into legislation. I'll be at the White House next week when we reconvene on a human trafficking conference with another one with Homeland Security. So I've got a number of pieces of legislation, from paid family leave to dependent care to some transportation issues. So I'm going to continue to saw wood and represent the folks in the 2nd District.
From a civics perspective, though, you guys can talk about all those things. And I guess, is anything going to land in the Senate, or would it even matter because they're dealing with the trial? I mean, I think that a lot of people would wonder if there's any real legitimate business that will be accomplished. I'm not saying for lack of trying, Ann, between now and November.
Well, you know, I mean, I sure hope so. I hope that the Senate can dispense with this in a just and fair but quick manner here, and so that, yes, some of the pieces of legislation that we are sending over to the Senate can be debated and voted upon. There are still, and I try and remind listeners all the time, there are a number of pieces of legislation that we vote on and are in agreement on and send over to the Senate that need to be taken up. Some of them we've been able to get done, as I mentioned, the rape kits, our funding for our military, things like USMCA, the trade deal in North America here. Those are things where we're getting action done, and I think that there are other efforts, especially concerning the cost of prescription drugs and health care, that the Senate ought to be taking up, and I hope that they too can get back to business, because that's what the people want. You know, I'm this is home for me. I'm around this district a lot, and we'll be in St. Charles later on this week and throughout the district. Folks are talking about, you know, their plans for the new year. They're talking about their kids. They're talking about things that affect their daily.
No, they're not talking about impeachment.
They're not talking.
No, I don't think they are.
Man. They're just not. You know, I if I'm up at my
Kathy Griffin and Rosie O'Donnell and Alyssa Milano, they're talking about impeachment. Most people
are
not. You know what they're talking about? They're cracking open their 401k statements. That's what they're talking about.
They ought to be doing that. Look at how fantastic this jobs market is for everybody, especially at the lower income levels. All boats have been, you know, have been lifted by this. They're pleased that their kids aren't living in their basement. They're looking for a job. They're pleased that their 401ks are doing better. You know, I'm working on legislation that's going to help them in their retirement saving years. So, you know, there are a lot of things. They're talking about the football and the Super Bowl coming up. They're talking about real life issues, let's face it. And that's what's so grounding about living out here in Baldwin, working back in our districts, talking to normal people at the grocery store, you know, the dry cleaners, the CVS, whatever it is. You know, it's, I don't know that this is front and center on people's minds.
Congresswoman Ann Wagner, we can look forward to a White House visit from Andy Reid, Pat Mahomey, and the entire Kansas City Chiefs in just a few weeks, I hope, right?
I can't.
I always got to call him Mahomey after the State Farm commercial. I just want to say Mahomey, you know?
I got to go bring the Stanley Cup to the White House and our Blues players, and that was pretty darn cool. So I am looking forward to the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Being in the Rose Garden. So here we go.
Look forward to it. All right, Ann, thank you very much.
You bet.
Take care. 247 at KMOX. I was going through some show prep stuff earlier, and I saw a headline. Actually, I saw it on realclearpolitics.com, but it was from Forbes magazine. And this is a post from the weekend. The headline was, How Visine Eye Drops in the Mouth Can Kill. Here are two cases. All right, you got me. Clickbait. I'm going to check that out. And in fact, it's a real story. It's not fake news, and it's actually really, really kind of interesting.
You are fake news.
No, it's real. So we'll get to that here after the top of the hour. So I have to get to the gun rally in Virginia, Richmond, Virginia. Here's the latest from the Washington Post, one of the media organizations that tried to scare the hell out of people. But this afternoon, they had to basically admit there was no violence. Weapons, flags, no violence. Massive pro-gun rally in Virginia Capitol. Thousands of gun rights advocates packed the streets around the Virginia Capitol on Monday, bristling with weapons, flags, and passionate shouts of USA, USA, but never erupting into the violence authorities had feared. Armed militias carrying assault-style weapons, that's stuff that looks scary, but really is no more powerful than some of the other guns, but they look scary, marched in formation in the streets until the crowds got too thick. Protesters without firearms filed through 17 metal detectors at a single entrance to Capitol Square, where Governor Ralph Northam had banned guns, and some 6,000 people cheered fiery speeches about the Second Amendment. So, look, you had the General Assembly in Virginia and Democrats promising to enact gun control laws. There are people in Virginia that don't take kindly to that. And this has been pretty much, for most of the media, just, you know, spun out as just a bunch of rednecks that are looking to fire off their weapons, right? Bunch of idiot gun owners. They don't know anything. They're all white guys, too, except for this guy who's black, and he explains why he was there.
Okay, why am I out here? Basically, I'm out here because I got roped into it by the group of guys you see standing to my right. But
he was kind of being funny there. There were some friends of his that literally dragged him along to the protest, but he actually gives a very good explanation for why he felt it was important to be there.
The real reason I'm out here is I do not support in any way, shape, or form Governor Northam's and the Democrats' gun control. What I also don't support is the fact that every news piece you've seen on this weekend, they've always brought up the issue of race as though it's nothing but white rednecks and hillbillies out here who care for the Second Amendment.
That's a good point right there. Now, this has been tied in with Charlottesville to a certain extent, because even though these are two different issues, let's face it, there was fear that something would happen along the lines of Charlottesville with a bunch of white supremacists, gun rights guys. Now, in fairness, there were some people that were arrested in advance of this that were white supremacists that the feds had their eyes on. But look, this was law-abiding citizens trying to get together to protect the rights of other law-abiding citizens. Go back to the guy who was there because of the reasons that he described.
Actually, black Americans, Asian Americans, Hispanic Americans, Americans in general care about the Second Amendment. I work at a gun store part-time, and I can't tell you the number of customers I see of all races, all colors, all creeds, who care about the Second Amendment and who just want to peaceably live their lives, enjoy their rights, and the Second Amendment.
So this would be where a lot of the folks in the media are just completely disconnected. And let me, before I play a little bit more audio from that guy, Gabe Gutierrez from NBC. I'm shocked that he did not delete the tweet, but he had a clarification, but everyone hammered him because he tweeted something out about how the crowd there, and there were massive crowds, were cheering, "We will not comply." So this is the tweet that he sent out saying that they were cheering, "We will not comply." You're going to hear something a little different here, I think. That is the Pledge of Allegiance. That is not a chant of "we will not comply." Now, Gutierrez kind of, again, he didn't delete the original tweet, but he said, look, here's another clip where you can hear them cheering that.
We will not comply! We will not comply!
So they went right into the Pledge of Allegiance. There were a handful of people saying, we will not comply, and he focused on that. But I love this guy. This guy, and I don't have his name, but the African-American who was at the gun rights rally, kind of speaking up for his position.
So that's why I'm out here. And big media, mainstream media, be damned. If you take a good look at me, you can see I'm a black American. And all I'm out here for is to enjoy my Second Amendment rights. That's why I'm here.
Great. And tell us about what do you think about the cordoning off that's going on out here of the Capitol area.
You know what? It's great. What we ought to do is everybody just walk up with master locks, put master locks on the gates, and lock that bastard in. That's what. No, to be quite honest.
Now, he was kind of joking about that, all right? And I think he realizes how that comment might come off because you can't joke about anything. And he clarifies because this is really, I think, salient.
Shut up. What I honestly think about it is, it's wrong. This is our capital. We pay for these grounds. This is not some place for the king to hold up in. This is our capital. This is our state. We have the right to petition for redress of our government, of our grievances. And our grievance today is their treatment of us and the Second Amendment. So the fact that he's got to hide behind fences like he's the king in Braveheart, I think is complete and utter garbage.
Ask yourself this question, ladies and gentlemen. Would you feel more comfortable, more safe going to a gun rights rally with thousands of gun owners, some with their semi-automatic weapons strapped in front of them, or going to parts of St. Louis? That was a rhetorical question.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.